Why is it so hard to sell yourself? It's episode 4017, LeaningTowardWisdom.com, the podcast. Kind of a slow, chilling out Friday. Hey, my name is Randy Cantrell. Let's get some energy going here. Coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, from a place that I call the Yellow Studio. Welcome to Leaning Toward Wisdom. You can find the show notes over at the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. I'd love it if you'd subscribe. You can do that through iTunes or Stitcher, favorite RSS reader. All kinds of ways to connect. Selling is hard, and selling yourself can be even harder. Why is it so hard to sell yourself? That's the subject today. You know, it helps when you're a maniac on a mission. Steve Jobs, he was a maniac on a mission. Mark Cuban, he's a maniac on a mission. Jeff Bezos, however he pronounces his name. There's lots of guys and gals that are maniacs on missions, and it's easy, I guess. Well, it helps. But all the difficulties of selling, I think they can be boiled down to one thing. And I think you know what that one thing is. Fear. Yep, fear. Most people focus on the fear of rejection. I'm not positive that that's it. I mean, haven't we all had enough rejection in our life to know that that won't kill us? You've had rejection. I don't care who you are, and I don't really care. I mean, if you're old enough to be listening to this podcast, you've had rejection. But come on, we're not teenage boys and girls anymore. We're adults, and we've been rejected many, many times. No, it's not fun. Nobody enjoys it. And yes, we can all, and we all do, take it personally, even when it's not personal. But is that really what's preventing us from selling, and more specifically from selling ourselves? Well, let's think about this. If we try to sell ourselves when we're rejected, it is personal. I mean, come on, it's very personal. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm way off base. Maybe that is the fear. I got my first sales job when I was about 16, and when I think back on it, I didn't have any fear walking into a local stereo shop and asking them if they were hiring salespeople. Well, it turns out they weren't. Somehow, and I've tried to replay this, and I've tried to remember, I just am too old, and it happened too long ago. I don't remember. Somehow, I ended up in the back office with the owner of the company, and he grilled me for some time about various hi-fi gear, and I answered all of his questions because I was confident. In fact, I knew my stuff. Well, he hired me, and I didn't have any experience at all. I mean, this was my first attempt. It was the very first stereo shop that I'd walked into. There were a handful of them in town. And little did I know that that would be the start of a long career in consumer electronics. That wasn't what I had in mind. I've looked back at that first blind leap that I took over 40 years ago to see, okay, what can I learn about my own selling hangups? And we've all got them. And there are some key things that I think can help you and even help me as I reflect back on it, because I'm still working on improving myself too. One, I was so passionate about hi-fi gear, I studied it constantly. I mean, I knew more about hi-fi gear than any of my friends. I was obsessed with it. Secondly, that obsession fueled my confidence in my knowledge. I mean, I knew, or I thought I knew, far more than I needed to in order to succeed at selling hi-fi gear. Well, it turns out I was right. You know, you don't really know until you put your skills to the test. And the only way to put my skills to the test was to get on a floor of a hi-fi shop. Third, knowledge, confidence, okay, maybe a little bit, okay, maybe a lot of naivete. That helped me get my first job. At least I think so. And that got me to thinking, okay, maybe that's the formula for success. Knowledge, confidence, and a bit of naivete, maybe a whole lot of naivete. Fourth, my desire was strong enough to compel me to want to get a hi-fi sales job so I could stop just reading about all this cool gear. Listen, I was so nerdy about it. I collected spec sheets. You don't see it so much anymore. Well, you don't see hi-fi shops anymore, but back in the day, hi-fi shops had a rack of literature. You know, people wanted to see the specs and they wanted to see the features, and every manufacturer produced mostly really slick, full color, magazine quality brochures. And some of these weren't just a single page. Well, I collected all that stuff, cataloged it, kept it in a file, would go through it, would look at it. Well, I wanted to be around this equipment. I wanted to get hands-on experience. Fifth, I didn't think about what I had to lose. Well, because frankly, I was too young. And what did I have to lose? I didn't have anything to lose. I didn't have much to lose other than maybe my pride. And well, maybe pride's the biggest thing we do have. I wasn't thinking about that. And maybe that's it. Maybe it wasn't that I didn't have anything to lose. I just didn't think about what I had to lose. I was too focused on what I wanted to care about. And what I cared about was being around this equipment. It wasn't that I cared about selling. I just wanted to be around the equipment. And I could easily talk about it, and I could talk knowledgeably about it with anybody. And so, okay, well, that all seemed fitting. You got to know the equipment. You got to be able to talk about it. Well, I could do that. Meeting people wasn't difficult. Talking to people wasn't difficult. So I could do that. And that's the last point. I knew what I wanted, and I went after it. I don't know about you, but I'm not an extrovert, at least not in the sense that most of us mean it. You know, I'm not a wallflower. But I'm not much for crowds. And nobody ever called me Mr. Party. Okay, nobody ever called me the wallflower either. I'm probably kind of stuck in the middle. If I had my ruthers, I'd rather stay home. But if I'm going to go out, I don't have any trouble mixing and mingling necessarily. Now, you might be so outgoing that you make me look like a hermit, and that's okay. For me, the point is successful selling isn't the... I don't think it's the exclusive domain of extroverts, and I don't think it's off limits to introverts. Now, you see the sales gurus, and you see all the sales training experts, and man, they just seem so charismatic, and they seem just so bigger than life, and I think there's the inclination for those of us that read and look at their videos and listen to them talk, we think, okay, I can't be like that guy. And some of us even think, I don't want to be like that guy. I don't think you have to be. I mean, keep in mind, they are in a training space. They're in a selling space. They're in a public speaking space. And that bigger than life kind of a personality, it goes with the turf. You kind of have to be that. You know, this laid back kind of a guy would not be able to be great at being a world-class sales trainer. But if that's what you wanted to do, okay, you kind of have to play the part. And that's a subject for another day, and I've got an episode planned about that too, is the power of acting. And I don't necessarily mean the fake it till you make it, but maybe there's part of that. But we all do need to learn to be better actors, and I think that would contribute to our success as well. Okay, but back to selling. Selling is persuading. Now, that conjures up some really nasty things for some people. Manipulation. Talking somebody into something. Oh, multi-level marketing. Coercing somebody. Pitching. And no wonder. You know, no wonder. When you think of all the bad language, I don't mean profanity, but the bad words, the bad language used by salespeople, sales trainers, and sales consultants. I mean, come on, just think about, well, I just throw a few of them at you. Pitch. You know, make my pitch. Okay, well, we know what we mean, and we don't mean anything derogatory, but it doesn't have this warm personal feel to it, does it? Upsell. Oh, yeah, well, I want to be the subject of that. Now, when we're doing the upselling, we want that. When we are the subject of that, and people are trying to upsell us, we don't much care for that, usually. Here's one that I hate. I've hated this for as long as I can remember, and the car industry is notorious for it. An up. Customer can walk into a showroom, and you're liable to hear somebody holler, Bob, you're up. Or, Bob, it's you're up. Don't you just love walking into a store knowing that you're the up? I guess it's better than being the down. Close. We know what we mean. These are not intimate relationship building kinds of words, though. I mean, the verbs and the nouns that are typically associated with selling, they're pretty impersonal. In fact, they're reminiscent of the verbiage that was used by the con men in the 1940s. So there's little wonder why people hate them so. They think it's something that it's not, though. In my experience, when even salespeople who just don't like to think of themselves as salespeople, and they surely don't want anybody knowing that they're a salesperson, they don't even call themselves salespersons. You can look on their card, and they may be called an account executive. You know, they don't even want the term sales associated with what they do, because they think it's something it's not. Well, they think it's something it shouldn't be. Now, unfortunately, the world is full of self-important, pompous salespeople who find success by manipulation and coercion. Yes, it happens. That doesn't mean that it's how successful selling happens, because when you stop to think about it, of all the selling that is happening around the world right now, you know, deep down, don't you know, most of it is happening between people who like each other, people who are benefiting each other, people who are finding value in doing business together. It's not all as adversarial as some people may think. There's a lot of selling going on in the world. There's a lot of selling that's been going on where a person who is the salesperson has had a relationship for a decade, for two decades, for three decades with a customer. These are mutually beneficial relationships. There was a news story here in town just north of Dallas. It's not quite a suburb. It's a little too far away to be a suburb, but there's a community called Denton, Texas. Well, Denton is just north of Dallas, for those of you that don't know, and there's a university there. The University of North Texas is there, and a hailstorm hit a couple of weeks ago. Big hailstorm. Lots and lots of damage. Now, that happens in this part of the country. In the springtime, this time of year, we get tornadoes, we get big thunderstorms, we get hail. And in this part of the country, insurance rates are as high as they are, primarily because of hail damage. Hail damage to roofs of houses and to vehicles. Car dealers, you know, can suffer big losses with hail damage. In fact, a lot of car dealers, they have these kind of canopies in their lots, as opposed to just the open concrete lot that we always used to see, because technology is such now that they can have these kind of hard mesh. Well, they're not hard, but they're very firm mesh kind of canopies that can protect the cars from hail damage. Well, this hail damage provided such a boon to roofing companies. And as they are wont to do this time of year, roofing companies just come out of the woodwork. And the news story was showing people who in prior years, they'd been duped. They'd been duped primarily by out of town roofing companies that would come in and they would undercut and say that they could do it for a much lower price than local competition, but they would require a 20% down payment. People would give them a 20% down payment and then they're off and you never see them again. And of course, there's no finding them because it's just some guy in a pickup truck with a magnetic sign on his doors. He has no business. He's just a con artist. And those stories, and as I was watching this last night on the news, I thought, you know, this is why people, rightfully so, have their resistance up at being sold. And it's also why some of us who are on the selling end, we can sometimes have to battle our own resistance to make a sale, or to beg the term, to make a pitch. So, I mean, how does all of that impact your fear factor? Does it affect it at all? Yeah, I guarantee it does. And frankly, it should. But I think there's another reason for the fear, and that is a lack of preparation. You can ask any seasoned sales professional to deliver a 20-second elevator pitch, and they're not going to be able to do it. I can just tell you right now. I mean, I guarantee, unless they are a door-to-door salesman, or unless they are one of these cats that sells one of those things that are demonstrated at the state fair, they won't be able to make that pitch in 20 seconds, and they will not be able to end it on time. And it's not because they're idiots. It's just because they haven't prepared in advance. Now, the two examples I gave, the door-to-door sales guy, he knows he's got to do it because he knows the door's going to slam in his face if he can't right away get your attention and pique your interest. The carnival barker, or the guy at the state fair who's pitching some item, and it may be a cooking item. It's usually going to be a cooking or a household kind of an item that they can demonstrate. You know, think along the lines of QVC. I mean, QVC really loves things that have a real high demonstration factor. We can demo this thing. We can show people what this thing does, and oh, we're amazed. I mean, it's the power of, you know, of the infomercial. And aside from those two groups, well, and con men, most salespeople just haven't prepared enough. They haven't thought enough about that kind of a 20-second kind of a presentation. Successful selling requires lots and lots and lots of preparation and a lot of pre-thinking. But people think, well, I can talk and I got a product, therefore I can sell. I don't need to prepare. I can just wing it. I'll just play it by ear. Okay, well, playing it by ear doesn't work. Two things cause this, I think. Laziness and ignorance. You can be just too lazy to put in the work. A lot of people are. But on the other hand, sometimes we just don't know what to do. We don't know what to say. We don't know how to say it. And it's not because we're stupid. We just don't know what we need to know. So if you couple those two things together, laziness and ignorance, I think too often that's why we're compelled to just wing it. We go by the seat of our pants. Now, if winging it works, terrific. Man, it's great. And it may work sometimes, but not with predictable success. And when it doesn't work, and it won't work, there, trust me, it will fail sooner or later, usually sooner than later. And when it does, when it fails, okay, well, now we're stumped. And winging it doesn't increase your confidence. Well, I guess it could if you're winning, but you're not going to win very much by winging it. And so when you wing it and you get rejected and you don't succeed, as opposed to increasing your confidence, now that's eroding your confidence. And guess what happens then? Yeah, you guessed it. Fear grows. When confidence decreases, fear increases. And then you know what happens. We used to joke about outside sales guys. I don't know that it's true so much anymore because I couldn't tell you the last time I went to a shopping mall, but you could go to a shopping mall in the middle of the day. And most malls, you know, had these movie theaters. And guess who was in there? Yeah, sales guys. Sales guys who didn't want to go make calls. And that's what happens. We just find it easier to do nothing. Paralyzed by our own fear. Here's the problem. Easier is not profitable. Easier is not profitable. So let's face our fears, because that's the only path to success. And so what can we do about our own resistance to selling, especially when it comes to selling ourselves, our ideas, our products, and our services? Now, before I give you these few things, let me make a confession. I admit to finding it infinitely easier to sell someone else than to sell myself. For instance, I'm thinking of a few clients. I would have no problem, because I've got such confidence in them and in their ability and in what they do, and I think that they provide such high value in the spaces where they operate. Going and chasing business for them would not be all that difficult. I would find it infinitely more difficult to do that for myself. And it's not because I don't have the confidence in what in the value I can bring. I do. It's just that I have this personal hang up of being a little bit too self-serving. And that's my hindrance. Now, I'm aware of that, and that doesn't help anything. You know, you can't move forward. You can't move forward by being your biggest problem, by being your biggest hurdle. So that's just sharing. Now, you may be very different than me. All right. So what can we do? Number one, have something valuable to sell. Now, the con men who are up in Denton trying to collect money to repair roofs, they don't worry about this step. In fact, con men of any sort, they just don't worry about this step of having something valuable to sell because they are driven solely and completely by getting somebody's money as quickly and as easily as possible and then moving on. Because in their world, they must gain at the expense of their marks. And they can't provide because they don't have anything to offer. You know, the guy with the pickup truck who's a con man who drove in from out of town because he realized that there was a big hailstorm and he sees an opportunity, he's not planning on ever getting up on a roof other than to employ the con. He's not going to load any shingles up there. He's not going to re-roof that house. He's just there to fulfill his obligation to the con and to collect the money. He's selling a dream. He's selling an illusion. The illusion is I can do this job cheaper than anybody else, so therefore I need to get 20% up front. You've got to be different. You have to provide something that people find valuable. Now, admittedly, it's great. It's great when people instantly see the value and they beat our door down and they beg us to buy. It doesn't happen. I mean, even Steve Jobs, if you go back and you look, Steve Jobs had to do some incredible amounts of education. He spent lots of time planning, strategizing, engineering, and working to prepare. And even then, he had colossal failures. You ever heard of Lisa? Not everything that he touched turned to gold. It was a long, arduous slug in the early days. Too many people rely on having a great idea when great execution of an average idea would be far better. Let me repeat that. Too many people rely on having a great idea when great execution of an average idea would be better. So get the value of your offer up. And don't confuse value, by the way, with pricing. Now, you may have higher value if you can lower your price. But you got to work at lowering your costs too, because if you don't, then the numbers aren't going to work to give you a sustainable or a profitable business. You can't just sacrifice margin. But it could mean that you need to raise your prices because maybe the market will bear higher prices. Maybe it would improve the appeal that you have to a higher end crowd if your price was higher. Well, whatever the strategy is that you employ, point number one here is just make sure that you're busy adding value that can be easily perceived by your target market. It's not a great business model to push water up a hill. It's not a great business model to have to spend lots of time and lots of money to educate your market so that they can see the value of what you've got. You need to make your value more easily perceived by your market. Now, I'm not telling you to not go into a space where you got to do a lot of education. That's just up to you, but it's not the best way to go. Number two, have a specific target market. Everybody isn't a market. Who have you created this offer for? Who's going to be the most excited to hear about your offer? And be as detailed as you can. Spend the time. Take the time. Really figure this out. And be realistic. Okay, don't delude yourself about who's going to be most attracted to your offer. You need to argue with your own logic. Now, this can be really difficult. To argue with your own logic is hard, but you need to try. In fact, I'm going to tell you, triage your target market notions and those ideas and do that really vigorously. Be tough on your strategy. Be devil's advocate of your strategy. And if you can't be tough enough, get somebody else who can be, because this is time well spent. Now, I'd also encourage you to think about who you want to serve. You know, this may not be an important step for everybody. I know some people, for instance, that are in a family business and it goes back many generations and they just, you know, they grew up in the business. They didn't really give any thought about who they wanted to serve. It was just kind of a foregone conclusion. Son will follow dad because dad's following his dad and he's following his dad. But there are other people that may be an enterprise because the return on investment is attractive, and they may not be thinking about who they want to serve. It just may mean that they saw an opportunity and the opportunity is attractive. They don't care. They're just looking for, you know, a really attractive return on investment, and this is it. But I think there's a subset of business owners and entrepreneurs, especially today, probably more so than in the past, who are heavily guided by serving a specific crowd or a particular kind of person because those are the kind of people that they're attracted to. Well, you got to weigh that into your strategy when you're looking at a specific target market. Who do you want to work with? Who do you want to be your customers? Who do you want to serve? Number three. All right, now it's time to ruthlessly pursue buyers. In fact, you owe it to them. And if you did a great job at step number one, bringing value, then you're robbing people. You're robbing people of the opportunity to have something valuable if you don't present it to them. So do not assume that your value is so high. Well, people just ought to find me. People just, they ought to be seeking me out. They just ought to be knocking my doors down. No, it's your job to get the word out. It's your job to find people in your target market and to present them with education, with information, with answers to their questions, with whatever else it takes so they'll buy or not. I mean, you can choose not to do that, but you'll fail. No, you got to push. You got to push. That doesn't mean you're pushy. It means you're relentless. It means you're undeterred. So I don't want you to get distracted at this step. And fact is, you cannot afford to get distracted at any of these three steps. You just have to do them. All right, here's a biggie. Don't sweat it if you mess up. Now, it's one thing if you messed up because you're winging it and you're flying by the seat of your pants. It's another thing if you've prepared and you've done your work and you're trying hard and you still mess up. Welcome to the world. We all mess up. Just let one thing, here's my encouragement, just let one thing embarrass you. Don't let anything but one thing embarrass you. You ready? Doing nothing. Don't be embarrassed when somebody says no. Don't be embarrassed when somebody says, well, how dare you call me? Don't be embarrassed when somebody slams a door in your face. Don't be embarrassed by anything except doing nothing. Be embarrassed if you let fear stop you. Be embarrassed if you let laziness hang you up. Otherwise, don't let anything embarrass you. Don't overthink it. Now, we're all prone to a little bit of overthinking. Some of us are prone to it more than others. I freely confess, I am big time prone to it. I mean, we think people are thinking about us more than they really are. They're not thinking about us. They've got their own work. They've got their own problems. They've got their own life. They will think of us if we give them something highly valuable. Well, then they're going to think about you. And that's great. That's great. If we fail, here's the good news. They're going to forget us faster than yesterday's news because they've got their own life. And that's also good. One way, we make a sale. The other, we get to move on and find somebody more suitable. And guess what? They move on too. We all win. See, we all win no matter what the outcome. We all win. No harm, no foul. As long as you're taking action. Now, that means as long as you're selling, then you're heading toward success. Boy, doesn't that bear repeating. As long as you're selling, you're headed toward success. The minute that you stall, the minute that you delay and you procrastinate, you're failing. And when you stop, well, you're dead. You're dead. It's over. Selling is life or death when it comes to business. You have got to find a way to do it successfully. And you will. If you do it and you stick with it, you will find a way to succeed. You will. Because it's the only way that you're going to get customers. And without customers, you don't have a business. So the bottom line, Which one's harder, surviving or thriving at business or dying? Well, okay, when you put it that way. Now listen, I wish it were all this easy. It's not. You know it's not. It's like the person who has an unhealthy lifestyle, you know, and the doctor might call them in and say, listen, you've got to change or you're going to die. Some people die because they refuse to change. And some businesses die. Well, some businesses don't ever get started because people just refuse to sell. Don't let that be your enterprise. Don't let that be your business. Don't let it die simply because you're afraid to sell yourself. I hope that helps. I hope I did number one, at least. I hope I had something valuable to, okay, I'm not selling it, but in a way I am. I'm selling the notion of, hey, give me your time and I'll give you something that's worthwhile. And I hope I did that. You be the judge. You can find the show notes and other blog posts and previous episodes. Depending on when you're listening to this, you might even find future episodes. How weird is that? Over at the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. All kinds of ways over in the right-hand column of the website, there's all the popular social icons where you can connect with me and ways that you can subscribe to the podcast. You can even join the monthly newsletter. Yeah, monthly. I really just blitz email inboxes. No, I don't. A few folks have said, you know, you're not selling anything, so what do we do if we want to support you? Okay, I've got an Amazon affiliate link. Yeah, come on. You know, it's minor, but hey, it's something. So if you care to support us that way, hey, please. We'd greatly appreciate it. So now get busy. Prepare. Review these three things. Have something valuable to sell. Have a specific target market. And then go ruthlessly pursue buyers. And I'm not going to give you that stupid advice, don't take no for an answer. Yeah, take no for an answer. Just move on. Move on. And don't make selling yourself so hard. My name is Randy Cantrell. The city of origin is Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. I'm sitting in the yellow studio.